So basically, when we discuss Anapanasati Sutta, Buddha mentioned there that Anapanasati as a one technique, as a one method, contributes to develop Kayanupassana, and it also contributes to develop Vedananupassana. It also contributes to develop Chittanupassana, and also contributes to develop Dhammanupassana. So we discussed how Buddha explaining it. So he is coming up with the 16-step recipe. The first four steps contributing towards the Kayanupassana, and then next four steps contributing towards Vedananupassana, and third four steps towards the Chittanupassana, and last four steps contributing towards Dhammanupassana. And then this whole process does not stop there. Rather, it contributes towards the enlightenment factors. So there are seven enlightenment factors, Bodhyanga. So the term Bodhyanga literally means Bodhi Anga. They are sort of facilitating the enlightenment, facilitating the understanding, facilitating the awakening. So we don't need to think this enlightenment as a very big, very huge kind of an activity where, like the Buddha achieved during the Vesak Poya day and all these things. What we need to understand here is then and there our mind become awakened, rather than stuck in various past memories or lost in various future plans, daydreaming. We are opening ourselves to the present moment. We are very much awakening to the present moment, then and there. So this process, as we continue, becomes kind of an ongoing process. It is not intermittent. Those intermittent awakenings become kind of a continuous awakening. Now, probably one can awaken, say, 10 minutes. Awaken for 30 minutes. Awaken for 1 hour. Likewise, so we can maximize this process. So in order to facilitate this process, we can use the body. We can use various feelings. We can use the mind itself. And in Dhammanupassana section, we can use various phenomena. How these enlightenment factors going to develop? So this is something interesting, because if we know how these practices are contributing towards the initiation of enlightenment factors, and how the very practice is contributing towards the development of these enlightenment factors and the fulfillment, then we understand, okay, we are doing it for a purpose. There is a deeper logic, there's a deeper theory behind this whole process. That's why we are doing it. Then we don't need to argue, telling that no point of watching the breath or no point of watching the rising and falling. It's a waste of time. So those arguments become wasting of time, because we know the positive aspect. We know the intricacies, how all these different processes are contributing to the enlightenment or the development of various qualities that we are aspiring to. Say, for example, when we are observing the mind, at that point, suppose we have very good mindfulness, we are not daydreaming, we are not thinking about various past incidents, rather at this very moment, we are observing what is going on in the mind. And Buddha very clearly mentions in Sandittika Sutta, there are several Sandittika Suttas. In that Sandittika Suttas, Buddha mentioned, if one knows at this very moment, the mind is going through some lobha, some kind of a greed. So this is a direct quality of the Dhamma. So we don't need to sort of blame ourselves, thinking that mind is going through lobha, greed. I should never have this greed. So there is no that kind of an attitude. Rather, at this very moment, we can recognize what is the state of mind. At this very moment, suppose I can recognize this mind is going through some greed. So at that moment, I am awakened. Again, if I am awakened, only then I can take the necessary action, either to allow it to fade away, or if I am not awakened, if I am somewhat sort of unmindful, then unknowingly I may be contributing towards this lower grade, and it might even overpower me. So ultimately, the whole body, whole mind become a victim of this ongoing craving, ongoing greed. But rather, if we are well established in mindfulness, we are in a safe place in a way. We are at a refuge. So while being at this refuge, now we are watching the mind. So at that time, we recognize, okay, the mind is going through greed. Okay, the mind is going through some anger. Mind is trying to entangle with some sort of thinking, but not yet fully victimized, but we can understand what is the ongoing tendency in the mind. So once we can recognize that, only there is a escape, there is a remedy. So that indicates we have well established mindfulness. So this is the beginning of Sati Sambojjhanga. This is the beginning of mindfulness enlightenment factor when we are discussing Cittanupassana. So, but in when we are recognizing, okay, this is greed, this is anger, this is jealousy, this is any other kind of restlessness. So when we can clearly recognize very distinctly, very correctly, each and every defilement or each and every even wholesome quality, that indicates the mind is fairly investigative. Mind didn't go wrong. So we didn't misunderstood anger from lust, but rather we could properly, correctly recognize, okay, this is anger. This is lust. Okay, this is jealousy. This is restlessness. This is samadhi. This is concentration. This is vitakka, applied mind, again and again applying to a kind of an object. So likewise, we can clearly see different aspects of the mind. So this indicates the investigation factor, Dhamma Vichaya Sambojjhanga, is in operation. So more and more we clearly recognize all these various mental qualities very precisely. That means we can the Dhamma Vichaya Sambojjhanga is developing. So we are not stopping this whole process after a couple of seconds. Rather, we do it throughout the day. So when one is in Cittanupassana section, from the very moment he awakens, he's getting up from his bed, he's well aware, okay, what is going on? He's starting sort of watching the mind. What is really going on in the mind? Is it mindful? Is it distracted? Is it in a happy mood, or is it in an unhappy mood? Is it lustful? Is it angry? So likewise, we have a kind of introspection watching the mind. So this real understanding, recognition, contributing towards the Dhamma Vichaya. And this is an ongoing process. Sometimes we feel, okay, what's really going on? Am I going back? Is my meditation going down? Because various defilements are arising. So we might even discourage, because even actually when we start our meditation, we couldn't recognize so much of defilements. But as we progress in the practice, more and more details become evident. So probably we might even discourage, thinking it's never going to finish. So much of things are there, so much garbage in the mind. So at that time, we need a lot of effort, a lot of energy to continue. This is the process. So I am in the correct track. So I have to continue. So likewise, we are energizing ourselves. We are motivating ourselves. So this is where the effort, virya, sambojjhanga, going to develop. Because we are not giving up. We continue the whole process, even though we can't really be satisfied with the ongoing process, because so much of thoughts are coming and going, defilements are rising and passing away. So likewise, still we are in the we are not in a happy state, but we know, okay, this is the only way to do. this is the path, I am in the correct track, so let's go, let's proceed. So likewise, we are encouraging ourselves. So we are using effort to continue. Assume this process sometimes gets successful. Mind is very quiet, very clear, no defilements, and the effort is, we don't need to have a lot of effort because the mind is in a very comfortable situation, blissful situation. At that time, that indicates the rupture, Viti, going to arise. Because we don't need to struggle now. Mind is in a very quiet, peaceful, happy mood. So, kind of a contentment can be arise because we have succeeded the inner journey, or we have succeeded the battle, and we can watch the whole situation while being in the backseat. So this rupture is going to arise. As a result, the body is calming down, the mind calm down, there is nothing much to do, there is no restlessness. So the tranquility, this passaddhi, sambojjhanga, is arising. More and more we are continuing, passaddhi is continuing. Passaddhi sambojjhanga is continuing. And mind is now very collected. It is not distracting. It is not going towards the past memories, not thinking about various future plans, but rather very comfortably living in the present moment. So concentration is there. So whenever a new phenomena arising, we are there. So we are not missing anything. Actually, I can remember Buddha praising Venerable Sariputta, telling this Venerable Sariputta is so competent. Whenever feeling is arising, he can see how a feeling is arising. Whenever a feeling is passing away, he can see a feeling is passing away. Without his knowledge, there is no feeling come and go. Without his knowledge, there is no thought come and go. So Venerable Sariputta is so capable, so he is very meticulously observing the whole process. This is a kind of an ongoing process. It is not effortful observation, rather an effortless of observation. So this is how the concentration is readily available. And it does not mean that we need any significant phenomena to observe. Even the mind is empty. Even the mind is very spacious. There is nothing to watch. But this emptiness being watched, this spaciousness being watched, so that itself is something useful. We don't need to think that the concentration is always coupled with some phenomena. So that is true during our previous stages. Say when you are observing a breath. So that is the phenomenon, and we are observing the breath. When we are observing feeling, painful feeling, happy feeling, neutral feeling, that is the phenomena. So we are observing that. Concentration is also available. And say we are observing lustful mind, angry mind, faithful mind, effortful mind, loving kindness. Those are various mental aspects. And observing them has concentration, momentary concentration. Assume the mind is totally free. Mind has no more phenomena. Body is very calm. There are no significant feelings. And the mind is fairly empty. So at that time, simple awareness of this emptiness. Just be. Just be. Kind of an awareness is there. Feel kind of a very comfortable, friction-free. Mind is very open and quite attentive and effortless. So this is another type of concentration, and this is something available especially in Vipassana. Actually, this kind of concentration is available in Samatha, but more into the Arupa Jhana, not in the Rupa Jhana, but more into the Arupa Jhana, where kind of an opening is there. Everywhere the awareness is spreaded. Similarly, in the Vipassana, one is encountering sort of a spaciousness, sort of a stillness, sort of a unbound state of mind, where there is no significant phenomena to watch, But mind is not distracted. Mind is not going to the past, not going to the future, but utterly in the present moment, not attached with anything. So if this is the situation, we can just be. Nothing to do. So at that time, equanimity comes to the front. So we are continuing, contributing, enhancing equanimity. So this is how using Chittanupassana, these various enlightenment factors are developing. And suppose you are observing a phenomena and how it is arising and passing away. You are seeing the impermanence nature of it. So in order to see the impermanent nature, so that means your mind is well established on that particular phenomena. So that means sati sambojjhanga, mindfulness enlightenment factor is on, in operation. So therefore, if we consider this dhammanupassana, anicchanupassi asasissamiti sikkhati, means that whatever the phenomenon, it may be a bodily activity, it may be a bodily phenomenon, it may be a feeling, it may be a mental activity, whatever it is, we see how it is arising, changing, disappearing, passing away. So in order to recognize this very clearly, well-established mindfulness is a must. So when we are engaged in such a process, the sati sambojjhanga, mindfulness enlightenment factor is developing. And when we know clearly, okay, this is the arising part, this is the changing part, or this is the passing away, fading away part. So likewise, when we clearly, correctly recognizing all these phases, that means the investigation factor, Dhamma Vichaya, is in operation. And if we come to, suppose the whole process is now going on really well, effort, there is no much effort is needed, but we are continuing the process. We need to continue because whatever phenomena arising and passing away, we are watching it carefully. Ardent effort is there because sometimes we might even get afraid. When someone is seeing all bodily processes, all bodily phenomena very rapidly arising and passing away, so you might even get afraid. But if you have good confidence, if you have a lot of effort, ardent effort, you are continuing. So this is where the effort, virya sambojjhanga, further developing. And when you are in well sync with the whole process, there is a bodily process, there is a watching mental process, everything is in well sync. At that time, there is nothing much to do. So the tranquility is available. Then the concentration, momentary concentration is available. And since everything is happening, it's also available. So likewise, when we are observing impermanent nature, impermanence characteristics of any phenomenon, so different enlightenment factors are going to develop. Actually, which enlightenment factor is predominant depend on the process. Suppose you are at the beginning stage. At that time, maybe sati sambojjhanga, dhamma vichaya. So they may be in the front. But later, when the process is happening by itself, you simply have to watch in a passive way. So at that time, equanimity is in the front. So likewise, the most prominent enlightenment factor going to change as when our whole meditation process is evolving. And in another sutta, actually that sutta is called Aggi Sutta, available in Bojjhanga Samyutta, Buddha mentioned how even to have a balance among these enlightenment factors. And Buddha says, Dhamma Vichaya Virya Piti has to be in one side. They are in one group. And tranquility, concentration, equanimity are in another group. And there Buddha says, when the mind is in a lethargic mood, quite a lazy mood, but at that time, don't develop tranquility, concentration, equanimity. Rather, you have to give prominence towards the investigation, effort, and virya. Because the mind is not in a energetic mood. So if you are contributing, if you are trying to concentrate the mind, tranquilize the mind, being equanimous, then mind going to sleep. Other Buddha encourage us to see very clearly what are more details are available, how things are arising, how things are changing. So likewise, sort of curiosity, investigation has to be aroused in order to go out of this drowsy, lethargic kind of a state. But on the other hand, suppose mind is in a restless situation, too much agitated. On that time, if we are going to develop investigation, effort and rupture, then Buddha says we are like pouring petrol into a sort of ongoing fire. Because already mind is restless. So at that time, Buddha encouraged us to develop tranquility, concentration and equanimity, because then only the mind becomes calmed down. So depending on the situation, depending on the state of mind, therefore we have to balance these enlightenment factors. So how are we going to balance these enlightenment factors? So that depends on we do some kind of a introspection. When the mind is going through any sort of a situation, we look back. We step out of the mind. Mindfulness is there. We are well established on mindfulness, and while being mindful, we watch the mind. What is really going on? Is the mind restless? Is the mind quite happy? Is it calm? Is it tranquil? Or is it agitated? So likewise, we can recognize. So this kind of an introspection helps us to do the proper adjustments. And again, suppose one is observing all phenomena with an attitude of dispassion. He's not going to engage with any of these arising phenomena, but he steps back and allow them to happen by themselves. So he is sort of in a dispassion mode. So in order to do that, so he still have to have good mindfulness, because all these various phenomena may be very tempting. Especially when various defilements are arising in the mind. So if we have very good mindfulness only, we can step back. We are well established in mindfulness, so we have our own refuge. So while being there, we can maintain a sort of disengage kind of an observation. We are not going to grab any of the ongoing things. Rather, we can step back and watch. So that dispassion is available. So on such an attitude, mostly equanimity is developing. Upekkha Sambojjhanga is developing. And we have the kind of awareness, kind of a concentration to clearly see what is really going on. The clarity of mind is available. And the mind is calm, even though the surface of the mind is a little turbulent, but still we have the calmness in the mind. So likewise, these different enlightenment factors are available when we are doing, say, Viraganupassi. And again, Nirodha Anupassi, Patanisanga Anupassi, all are different attitudes, different aspects we can take to the front. So more we clearly see various phenomena, may it be bodily phenomena, may it be feelings, may it be various mental phenomena. So mindfulness becomes the front. It becomes kind of an essential component. That is where Buddha says in Aggi Sutta, even though Dhamma Vichaya, Viriya and Rupture is in one group, and Tranquility, Concentration and Equanimity are in the other group. So we understand certain group contributes towards the energy side, contributes towards the investigation side, contributes towards the sort of activation side. The other group, on the other hand, contributes towards calmness, calming down, tranquilizing. So they are little sort of opposite to each other. But on the other hand, mindfulness, Buddha says, everywhere it is necessary. So there is no place that we have to be lack of mindfulness. Rather, Buddha says, satikvaham bhikkave sabbattikam vadami. So this statement comes in Aggi Sutta. Buddha mentioned very clearly, mindfulness bhikkhus has to be available everywhere. Because mindfulness is the one showing the clear picture. The big picture is shown by mindfulness. So what is the state of mind, and what is the which group has to be developed, and which group has to be calmed down, not to develop. So next time I hope to discuss how further we can develop various enlightenment factors in order to contribute towards the understanding, wisdom, and again the freedom of mind. Vijjav and Vimutti, that is actually the last part of this Anapanasati Sutta. And while keeping that part for the next week, I like to open the session for questions.
Avasarai Bhante, there are 8 questions today. So I'll go to question 1 of 8. So the first 3 questions are from last week because we sort of ran out of time and had some internet issues. Question number 1. This is day-to-day activities. If in our normal life we recognize any thoughts as anger, jealous, eager, etc., and can control them, will it fall under citta anupassana? Can we develop such situations up to upekkha or equanimity? That's the end of the question.
Actually, simple controlling is one aspect. Actually, there are different strategies Buddha mentioned how to develop citta anupassana. Say, for example, when you are being aware of greed, when you are being aware of lust, when you are being aware of delusion, any kind of entanglement of the mind, or when you are aware now there is faith available, there is concentration available, mindfulness is available. So likewise, this is kind of a very understanding at that very moment, what is the state of mind. So this is Buddha say, this is actually a sandhittika dhamma. This is actually the readily availability, very direct experience of dhamma, because at that very moment, you are well aware of the present moment, what is really happening at the mind, in the mind. So this has to be enhanced. So this has to be maximized. And that is where the citta anupassana further develops towards the dhamma anupassana, where when, say, lust is not present, you are aware lust is not present. When lust is present, you are aware, okay, lust is present. And suppose there is no lust at the moment. But now lust is slowly growing. There are some thoughts coming. There are some images coming in. So likewise, now you can clearly recognize, okay, now there's a possibility, there's a tendency. Now the lust is arising. Anuppannassa kamacchandassa uppado hoti tancha pajana. That is how Buddha explains in the Dhammanupassana section, where there was no lust at that moment, but now, in the previous moment, there was no lust, but at this moment, now there is a little ripening of lust. There's a little growing of lust. And then you are in a safe place, you are not sort of carried away by the lust, but rather it may be fading away. So uppannassa kamacchandassa pahino hoti tancha bhajanati. So Buddha says, now when the lust is gone, it disappeared, that also is known. And pahinassa kamacchandassa ayating anupado hoti tancha bhajanati. When lust has gone, and now there's a peace of mind, there is no lust available in the mind. There is lust-free mind at the moment. So that is also observed. So likewise, this process has to be further developed. So just very recognition of various defilements is not enough. Actually, more and more mindfulness is developed, so that even very recognition causes those defilements to fade away very quickly, because mindfulness is very strong. And you are... wisdom is also very strong. So as a result, we are not supporting any of the defilements. Rather, we are well aware whenever they are arising at their very early stages, at their inception. And since the mindfulness is clearly seeing everything, sampajanya is also there, clear comprehension is also there. So when we are aware of any of these defilements, they simply go away. because they can't sustain by themselves unless we support them. So since they are not supporting and we are recognizing them at their very early stages, so then simply they go away because of the high mindfulness, very good mindfulness. But on the other hand, if you are still in a very early stages of development of mindfulness, that weak mindfulness may not be enough for those defilements to pass away, those defilements to go away, because still the hindrances are strong, powerful. So on such situation, just being aware of various defilements may not be enough. So you may have to do further development, further various other strategies might have to be used in order to tackle these defilements. So that is where the metta bhavana, say for example, the mind become angry. So you are aware now there is anger, but just being mindful, it does not go, because mindfulness is weak. And you only get to know anger at a little high state. At that time, the mindfulness has spread everywhere, like a virus, for example, like a cancer. So if you recognize cancer at its inception, it is easy to take a remedy. But if it is spread throughout the body, then you have to go through chemotherapy, etc., etc. It's a big process. So likewise, whenever defilements are recognized at its inception, we have a better chance of overcoming it very quickly. But on the other hand, if due to lack of mindfulness, if they have grown to high state, so we have to use other strategies. So if anger is too much, then probably we can practice metta meditation, loving kindness meditation, so that we can calm down the mind. On the other hand, if the mind is going through a lot of burning lust and we couldn't control it, probably we can do some asubha bhavana. So likewise, different strategies Buddha has mentioned, but ultimately, when mindfulness is grown, we don't need to use any of these other techniques. We can be confident about our own practice, about the mindfulness itself. So that is where Buddha mentioned the noble people, Arya Puggalas, actually they simply trust on mindfulness. So they keep mindfulness as the only protector. If you read the Arya Vasa Sutta, which is available in Anguttara Nikaya 10th section, Dasaka Nipata, where Buddha mentioned, Eka Rakko Hoti, Sata Rakkhena Chetasa Viharati, where the noble people, Arya Puggala, say they are actually keeping mindfulness as their own protector, only protector, and because mindfulness is fairly strong, and just being mindful, they can simply overcome any of the defilements. Actually, mindfulness is well coupled with wisdom. It is not that the mindfulness alone is operating, but the mindfulness is the one showing the picture. And at that time, one can utilize any of different strategies to overcome the recent defilement.
Question 2 of 8. Walking and sitting. Dear Bhante, I start sitting practice after 50 to 60 minutes of walking practice. The walking process happens as well as per Bhante's guidance. The mind gets collected well after about 30 minutes. When this happens and I sit down, I could not trace the breath from the start, which makes the sitting process a bit awkward. The breath becomes very subtle and disappears immediately, which makes me wonder if my concentration is too much. Is it okay to reduce the walking process and cut down the time in this scenario? With metta, that's the end.
So, I mean, let me clarify a little bit, Chatu. So he's in the walking process, right? Still in the walking meditation. Sorry, your mic is mute.
So let me have a quick look. So he starts the sitting practice about after 60 minutes.
Exactly.
And then he gets collected. And then I think the question is, maybe they need to reduce the walking price, time.
Because mind is very calmed down. Is it?
Yeah, I think that's the question. Yeah, it's actually, maybe too calm or something. I'm not sure.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, when we do a fair amount of walking, so the breath can be calm because we are developing mindfulness. So we are developing some tranquility. So less distraction. So as a result, the breath can be quite calm. And once we sit, so the available breath is very subtle. So, I mean, for some, it may be difficult to catch the breath because it is already subtle. But on the other hand, if one has properly utilizing this developed mindfulness, so nothing to worry. Simply, you can keep your attention at the breath, at the nostril. Some gross breath is not available, but slowly, slowly, as your mindfulness refines. So then, again, this refined breath, subtle breath, going to be available. So rather than trying to reduce the walking period and then start sitting with the gross breath, I suggest you to continue as the way going on. And once you come back and keep as usual, you can keep your attention at the nostril. And even when there is no gross breath is available, very subtle breath may be available, and you are simply keeping your attention at the nostril. There is nothing much to do. There is nothing much to watch. But still you are keeping your attention at the nostril. And as a result of this further refining, because when you come back, when you are sitting after coming back from a walking session, it may take a little bit to settle because the body has to be settled. Again, the mind has to adjust to the new posture. So likewise, it may take several minutes to completely settle to the present moment. So after that, it's a matter of refining mindfulness, because you may can definitely refine your mindfulness in sitting posture than the walking posture. So because the body is in a still position and mind is not agitated, and you are not doing anything intentionally. So all these different, and again, the body is quite comfortable compared to the walking posture. So likewise, there are various attributes contributing towards refined mindfulness while being in the sitting session. So therefore, when that level of refined mindfulness is available for you, then you can recognize this subtle level of breath. So therefore, you can simply continue your practice as you are doing. So don't worry even breath is not available. And don't worry even thinking that every time the gross breath has to be available, then only I can proceed. Rather, just by keeping your attention at the nostril and without being sort of agitated, without enjoying any kind of a doubt, just keep your attention at the nostril. Slowly, 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 you can recognize how breath is going to appear, and it may be a very subtle breath, of course.
Question number 3 of 8, sitting mindfulness. Vandami Bante, I'd like to share my recent sitting experience. I first started with looking at breathing. Breathing can be seen from the start to the end properly, including the gap. After a few minutes, it fades away and I started feeling a painful feeling. Usually my sitting meditation finishes with this painful feeling. However, a few days ago, I was determined I would not stop the sitting if the painful feeling came, and I would look at what would happen to the painful feeling. It was increasing in intensity, and within a few minutes it faded away it faded away and they could feel a bit of heating in the body. I looked at the mind, it was relaxed. Suddenly I started with a deep breath, and heart rate was also going with the same speed. I looked at it, but this time the surrounding environment made me scared. This time,
last statement.
Um, So suddenly I started a deep breath with the heart rate, which was also going at the same speed. I looked at it, but this time the surrounding environment made me scared.
Scared,
yeah. So I think they're a little bit frightened.
Okay.
So that time, breathing and heart movements stopped. I had this experience a few times before as well. Please kindly give me advice to improve my meditation. That's the end of the question.
Didn't mention for how long heart stopped, ne? Heart stopped.
No, not specifically. It's not worded so well.
Okay. So I think because, I mean, typically there are different experiences can happen. But if we can allow it to happen rather than getting agitated, then the whole process going on by itself. But if we have any kind of a prejudice in the mind, kind of a framework in the mind, some fixed recipe in the mind, so then we are in the wrong direction. Actually, more we get on towards the mindfulness practice, more we are continuing our practice, we have to allow things to happen by itself. So we are not intervening the process. We are not interfering the process. We are not having any kind of a predefined agenda towards how things are going to happen. Rather, we have kind of a radical acceptance. Whatever it is happening, I am ready. So I have given my life towards the Buddha, Dhamma, Sangha. So let things happen. So likewise, if we are continuing our practice, then, I mean, even various, bodily processes are happening, painful feelings are happening, but I am enduring them. I am being patient with them. And after that, suppose it is all calming down. So I am just being aware of them. And again, the heartbeat is increasing. I am aware of that. Heartbeat is decreasing. I am aware of that. But I am not trying to get agitated. I am not expecting it to be in a particular rate. I don't have any recipe. I don't have any kind of predefined schedule, predefined framework. Rather, I am having a quite open attitude. Whatever happens, I am simply being mindful of that. So therefore, I mean, it's difficult to give a direct answer immediately. Rather, next time also you go prepared and there's a possibility of this thing to happen and you are aware of that when it is happening and just having some effort and the courage, you continue your practice. And if it is continuing further and further, again and again, please let me know so we'll discuss further.
Question 4 of 9. This is about day-to-day activities. Dear Venerable, I would like to put my attention only to the breath all the time. But when I have to deviate from that and talk to someone or do some other mentally involved work, such as writing emails, I get a little agitated. But I am not lazy. I do all the other work. I want to be able to do things as if I'm wearing a glove and touching all the dirt. I remember I come to this state before. I have come to this state in the past when I attend retreats. It is a good feeling. I know nothing is permanent, but I feel that this place is a safe place to be. Any advice would be much appreciated. With metta, that's the end.
So can you repeat, Chatu, that state? Has he mentioned what is the kind of state he is telling that kind of a refuge?
Okay. It says... I think this is what they say. I want to be able to do things as if I'm wearing a glove and touching
Wearing what?
A glove, like something on your hand.
Glove. Uh-huh.
Yeah,
okay.
Gloves, yeah.
Right.
I remember I come to this state in the past when I attend retreats. It's a good feeling.
Okay. I can sense something. Fine. Actually, at the beginning stages of our practice, so we are effortfully developing mindfulness. Actually, we are trying to be in the present moment. We are keeping our attention on the breath. are keeping our attention each on each sensation, each feeling, each sensation while walking. So likewise, we are, in a way, we are doing. So a lot of effortful practice is there. But more and more we develop mindfulness, so then the mind understand what is the proper dose, in a way. So we don't need to put a lot of effort now, because mind is already calm, already mindful. So at that time, we have to reduce the effort and allow the process to happen by itself. So that is how we disengage from the process. So process is there, so but we disengage from the process. And we are watching the whole thing, but in a more comfortable manner, not with effortful manner, but rather with some effortless manner. So this is quite comfortable. When compared to your previous state of practice, now this state is quite effortless. Now things are happening smoothly. So as a result, you feel, okay, you are like wearing a glove. Because things are available, but you don't need to strictly or sort of a strongly grasp anything, because the mind is not distracting, but rather mind prefers to stay in the present moment without much of your intervention. Mind by itself is staying in the present moment very happily. At that time, you can simply be in the back seat and let the thing happen. So this requires a fair amount of practice. So therefore, if you have experienced that kind of a situation, on that time, actually the whole thing is in the proper place. But now, due to some reason, if things have gone in the negative direction, you may need to further develop mindfulness and clear comprehension. So as a result, you may definitely come back to the same state. So it's a matter of time that how long you will take to refine this mindfulness, how much you are spending time. And as a result of your continuous practice, you definitely can come to this stage. So don't worry, so you can continue your practice. So slowly you would be able to come back to the same state where you were. Because more and more the practice become effortless.
Question 5 of 9, sitting mindfulness. Dear Venerable, I started by looking at my breath. I was watching about 5 breaths and then noticed a feeling of sudden emptiness. A sudden empty large feeling. It's like when I'm looking at a star in the dark sky, how suddenly the attention goes to the vastness of the sky. So I was paying attention to it. Then I noticed various thoughts come in. They didn't look like thoughts. They looked like actions, things I need to do. So although my eyes were closed, these things were playing in the front. I dwelt on them for a while and told myself, my mind is getting agitated and I don't like it. So I want to come back to the breath. Then the mind came back to the breath again. After 5 breaths, it went to the vast, large, empty feeling. This happened like cycles. In between the breath and the vast, large emptiness, the thoughts popped up. Another thing I also noticed was during this sitting, at the beginning, I found various parts of my body had been tight. For example, tongue was pushed down to the bottom of the teeth. And this happens when I'm nervous in normal life anyway. Shoulders were not relaxed and taking short breaths. During this time, they eased, but I noticed a heaviness in the heart. It's just like an energy ball near the heart. I wonder if I was under stress or pressure in some way. And just a little background, I had to force myself to study for an exam, and I was getting a bit stressed about it, not sure if it was because of that. Any advice would be appreciated with metta. That's the end.
Yeah, actually, what you have explained is the sort of the indications that some kind of a tension is available. Whenever tension is available, we are keeping either tongue pressured onto the gums or onto the teeth. So that is one way of physical aspect. And sometimes our shoulders, as you have mentioned, are kept effortfully, not relaxed, not in a restful position, but in a sort of tense position. Sometimes we keep our hands in a tight position. We are pushing rather than simply relaxing. Maybe some certain muscles we may be effortfully holding. Not the whole body is in a very restful, relaxed position. Likewise, and again, it's quite obvious. Now, when we are at a stress, there are many wrinkles in the forehead. So likewise, different indications are there. Bodily indication, physical indications are there. Now the body is in a stressful situation, and the mind, of course, in a body is in a tense situation, and of course the mind is also in a tense situation. So mental tension, the mind tension actually contributes to the physical tension. So when you can recognize these physical tense points and let them go, then mind also become tension free. Say for example, if you are able to recognize, okay, I am thrusting my tongue towards the gums, towards the teeth. Now if you recognize that, so why am I doing it? It creates some kind of a suffering. It creates some kind of a tension. So you can simply relax the tongue. You can keep tongue at a very restful position, maybe in the middle, not touching any of the places, just in the middle. Then that tension calms down. Suppose you are keeping your hand thrusting towards something with a lot of effort. Now you relax your hand and come back and keep it on your lap. So the tension is gone. So likewise, so these physical tensions are very good indication to be free from tension. So we recognize the tension, and as a result, we can understand, okay, I am unnecessarily making attention, unnecessarily keeping some effortful posture, so I can relax. So as a result of that relaxed, effortless nature, then the mind is also calming down. Actually, this is very simplified practice of Four Noble Truths. In the Four Noble Truths, Buddha asks us to recognize suffering, recognize unsatisfactoriness, recognize stress, recognize tension. So whatever it is unsatisfactory, Buddha asks us to recognize. So instead of we are dealing with the mind, suppose we can even deal with the body. If we can recognize these bodily tensions, bodily stress, then Buddha asks us to see the cause. So then we can recognize, okay, I'm putting unnecessary attention, unnecessary hope. Likewise, I have too much expectations. So we may have mental component to that. So you can release that. As a result, mind calms down and body calms down. So therefore, if you have an exam in the front, definitely it also contributes this whole process. And therefore, calm down yourself and keep the body stress-free. And then mind also becomes stress-free, tension-free.
Bhante, is it okay if we go a little bit of overtime? We've got another three questions.
Yeah, no problem.
Okay. Question number 6 of 9, mindful walking. Dear Bhante, I have been practicing mindful walking and sitting sessions regularly. Now I coming across to a stage of observing various thoughts arising and passing away after some time of being mindful. When I observe thoughts, the passing away seems visible, but the begging is hard. But the begging is quite hard to observe. Only when
beginning.
I spend at
maybe beginning, right? Beginning is hard. Ah,
yeah,
to observe.
Beginning. Yes. I think that's right. Only when I spend adequate amount of time being mindful on the breath or walking, I start seeing the gap before the thoughts arise. During day-to-day activities, I cannot do this at all. Only when the thoughts are prevailing, I know that they are thoughts, and I can watch them until they pass away. Is it normal, Bhante, that the gap before any thoughts arise is difficult to observe? With metta, that's the end.
Yeah, it is difficult to observe at the beginning because still mind is not restful. It is mindful, is in a little restless state, and therefore one after the other thoughts are coming. But more and more you observe them, more and more you are not contributing towards them, you are not encouraging them, you are not strengthening them, then they start to calm down. They start to fade away. So once they are fading away, then you are observing the gap. Then you observe, okay, one thought came and passed away. Another thought came and passed away. Another thought came and passed away. And since you are not strengthening them, you are not promoting them, so they pass away quickly because they are not growing to higher levels. Rather, they come and you are mindful and quickly they pass away. Another one come, you are mindful, quickly it is passing away. So now slowly, slowly, gap going to arise. There is no new thought coming up, new thought popping up. Now you can experience the gap between thoughts. So if you can recognize this gap between thoughts, just encourage that. So you need to further encourage that that sort of a practice. You simply have to continue your practice. So as a result, your mind becomes more relaxed. Mind becomes spacious. And mind becomes still and thought-free. So this is, Buddha says, this is the typical, normal nature of the mind. All these thoughts are, in a way, strangers to this mind. But unfortunately, we are thinking strangers as our family members. So we actually have sort of misunderstood the whole situation. But Buddha says, let these all strangers go away. And then you come back to the reality. More and more we allow thoughts to pass away without encouraging them, without strengthening them. Their lifespan become less and less, short and short, shorter and shorter. And as a result, mind becomes rather calm and the gap going to be increased. The gap between thoughts going to be increased. So that gap, that spaciousness has to be further developed. Then the mind become more and more spacious. It's very much like not sweeping the house. So a lot of garbage. Where are a lot of garbage. Now suppose you started sweeping the whole floor, sweeping the whole garden, sweeping the whole house. Now slowly the whole house become quite tidy, quite clean, quite spacious. So similarly, the mind is also corrupted with a lot of unnecessary things, congested with a lot of unnecessary thoughts, a lot of unnecessary regrets, various past memories. And we are continuing to encourage that. We are continuing to aggravate that. Rather doing that, so why not allow them to calm down? Why not slowly disengage from all these thought processes? If you do that, then all these thought processes go away, calm down, and mind become calm, mind become thoughtless. So this thoughtless but fully awakened, thoughtless but fully mindful, thoughtless but fully aware. So this is the state Buddha says, pabassaramidam bhikkhave cittam. Mind is originally, Buddha says, clear. Clean. And now we are able to touch that clean mind, sort of spacious mind, tension-free mind, still mind. And that from there we have to further develop. And therefore I encourage you to continue your practice and appreciate this emptiness, appreciate this spaciousness.
Question number 7 of 9. This is about day-to-day activities. Is there a difference between focusing and being mindful? And when doing day-to-day activities, is it advisable to focus really hard on the activity? That's the end of the question.
It depends actually. So if you are at your early stages of developing mindfulness, you may have to effortfully focus on various activities. Say you are sweeping. So you have to focus your attention on the grip. Maybe you have to focus your attention on the touching sensations. Maybe the sensations happen on your soles. So likewise, you have to focus your attention. Because if you are not doing it, then mind distracts. It may go to the past, it may go to the future. But on the other hand, if you are developing daily and if you are able to recognize spacious mind, if you are able to recognize that unbound kind of a nature of the mind, if you are able to maintain sort of an emptiness in the mind, then the mindfulness becomes effortless. So at that time, no need to effortfully focus your mind. Suppose you are sweeping, but keep the mind empty while sweeping. You don't need to specifically pay attention to any place. Rather, keep the mind free. Keep the mind empty. That becomes more and more comfortable. And that would be the encouraged path further. Actually, we didn't discuss that level in the Anapanasati Sutta section. We can discuss it on next week. But at our early stages of development, we have to effortfully focus our attention.
Question number 8 of 9. This is a general question. Venerable Sir, with my thoughts during meditation, sometimes I am unsure whether I am simply watching the thought or whether I am involved in them. The outcome is the same either way. The thought eventually passes, or I analyze it and I return to breath or stillness. Sometimes I can see when it arises, but sometimes I cannot. Sometimes I do feel emotions with these thoughts, whether positive or negative, in daily life. Even if I watch a show, I will feel emotions corresponding with the actor. So I find myself a bit confused, sometimes whether I'm involved in the thought or not, or whether I'm going in and out of involvement with the thought. Can you please comment on this? How can I further explore what is happening? I would appreciate if you have any suggestions. Thank you very much. That's the end of the question.
Yeah, actually, if we are involved in the thought process, then it may last for a long time. Actually, as I said before, we are the one strengthening this mental process. Whatever the thought process, we are the ones strengthening. If we are not strengthening, they themselves doesn't have much energy. It may vanish, it may fade away very quickly. So therefore, you can verify. So if any kind of a thought process is appearing, if it lasts for a long time, that means you have contributed. You have fertilized it. You have strengthened that. You have motivated that. On the other hand, if there is any thought process quickly fades away, that means you didn't encourage it. You didn't contribute towards that. You didn't participate in the process. You simply allow the process to happen by itself, but you kept some disengaged attitude. You are able to sit back and watch. So therefore, you can actually check, you can actually verify, are you contributing? Are you get entangled towards any kind of a mental process or not? Actually, more and more you recognize that you are contributing or you are preparing this, you are fabricating. So why am I doing it? So that's another question you can ask. I mean, suppose there's a little thought coming. There's a little mental image also attached to it. Why are you complicating it? Why are you preparing it? Why are you further fabricating it? Why are you adding many other components towards that? Let it be. You don't need to put your hand. We don't need to get entangled. We don't need to put our hand. We don't need to interfere. Let it go. So the whole practice becomes sort of a letting go process, because we understand the futility of this interference. We understand the sort of repercussions, consequences of this interference. Rather, we keep some distance. We keep kind of a disengaged attitude towards the ongoing mental process. So as a result, mind becomes calm and calm. So that's why Buddha says, Ditte dittamattam bhavissati. Sute sutamattam bhavissati. Mute mutamattam bhavissati. Vinyate vinyatamattam bhavissati. When you see, just see. Don't make a story. When you hear, just hear. Don't make a story. When you sense, just sense. Don't make a story. When you know that there is a thought going on, just be aware. Don't make a story. So this is a kind of a, in a way, I mean, we can't say this is very early stage of your practice, but this is the direction we have to move forward. So I encourage you to continue.
Question number 9. This is the last one. Mindful walking. Is it meaningful to try to be mindful about the steps while walking fast? I am new to this program. That's the end of the question.
Definitely. I mean, you can do intermittently. Suppose while walking slowly, you can be mindful. While walking in a fast pace, you can be mindful. But the best is to understand what is the most comfortable speed. There is no any kind of a predefined speed for the practice, but rather you have to recognize, okay, what is the most comfortable speed? If you walk too fast, then you can't continue for a long time because you feel tired. But on the other hand, if you do too slow, then mind becomes sluggish, drowsy, lazy. So therefore, you need some kind of a movement, some kind of a speed, but it has to be not too much and it should not be too less. Therefore, find your own proper balance kind of a speed, and any speed is valid for you. Any speed is possible, and you can be mindful while running. You can be mindful while walking. You can be mindful while sitting. You can be mindful while standing. So mindfulness is possible in all postures.
So that's the last question.